What are the implications for the pro-life movement under a pro-abortion administration? Find out next on Gospel of Life. Hello, I'm Father Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome to our program. We're joined, as usual, by our Associate Director, Janet Morana, and today by our friend Mark Crutcher, President and Founder of Life Dynamics, from whose headquarters we tape these shows. Mark, good to be with you.
Nice to be back.
Janet.
Nice to be here.
So we are under an Obama administration now, and as I said, the day after the election, it's an Obama-nation, because
right.
This is a man who is more pro-abortion than any occupant of the White House in our nation's history. And, of course, we warned people before the election of what the implications of this would be. And now we have to talk to our movement about some of the pitfalls that we may fall into if we're not careful in the way that we think and interact with one another and carry out our pro-life work.
Yeah, well, we've gone from an administration whose theme was No Child Left Behind to an administration whose theme is No Child Left Alive. And as dire as that sounds, what we have to understand is we've been through this before.
We have.
With Bill Clinton. And I can remember, and I'm sure you went through this too, Father Frank, that the week that Bill Clinton was elected, our phones lit up. People were despondent. We used to call them ledge calls. We had a name for them. These people are on the ledge. They're fixing to jump, you know. And I can remember people would beat me, and my employees would beat me and say, hey, you've got another ledge called on line one. You need to talk to these people. Mm-hmm. Talk them off the ledge. But the reality is that we thought that this was the end of the world. And then a few weeks later, we got up off the canvas and dusted ourselves off and went to work. And what people don't understand is, or a lot of people don't understand, even the pro-life movement, during the 8 years of Bill Clinton, we closed more abortion clinics in this country than in any other period of time.
In fact, in those years, both of our works were and our organizations were growing.
Right.
Right. I mean,
exactly.
We Priests for Life just took off like a wildfire during the Clinton years. And,
right.
And I know we were working together from the beginning.
Right.
Life Dynamics was as well.
Right. And we, you know, since 1992, when I started Life Dynamics, over 70% of the abortion clinics in this country have closed.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of them closed during those 8 years.
During those years.
Because
yeah.
The pro-life movement quit depending on other people to do their work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've seen this many times where someone who is ostensibly pro-life gets elected, and the whole pro-life movement kind of takes a deep breath and sits back and says, oh, good, now we've got somebody up there that's going to do this and this and this. None of that ever happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then we panic when we get somebody like a Barack Obama.
Well, that's why, you know, when we do all the talking we do about elections prior to the elections, always reminding people, look, we're not trying to put into office people who are going to do our work for us.
Right.
We're trying to put into office people who are not going to stand in our way. The work remains ours. It's the
right.
work of the people of God to bring an end to abortion and to do so community by community.
Right.
That's right. And, you know, I mean, we just had 8 years of a pro-life president. While he was able to do a certain amount of things, you know, when a pro-life bill came before him, obviously he voted it, you know, signed the bill. But there's only so much they can do. And really, you know, I always think about what Senator Brownback told me one time. He says, you know, Janet, we can only do so much in Washington. What has to happen is out in the grassroots, from town to town, the changing of the heart. And that's what Mark is really referring to, is the pro-life people now can't, like, throw their hands up in the air and say, oh, well, we got 40 more years of Barack Obama, so we can't do anything. Oh, no. You can do a lot of things with the people that you know. I always tell people, start with your circle of influence,
right.
The people that you interact with. The facts that they hear, like on our programs and on Life Talk with Mark, this is the facts you can use to convert the hearts and minds of the people in your immediate circle and then go from there. I
right.
mean, there's a lot of work to be done over these next 4 years.
Well, it's a fact. If you think about it for a minute, if you've got a friend, that friend has more influence over you than any president or any politician's ever going
right.
to have.
That's right.
Because you know that person, you interact with them. You're not going to interact in most cases with a well-known politician. And these guys aren't going to do anything for us anyway. And that's just a reality. And it's like you say, just get out of the way.
Right.
And stand back out of the way, and we'll take it from here.
Yes.
But like I said, we've been through this before, and this is not a time to panic. That doesn't mean there aren't danger signs, and there are danger signs, and I've seen some of them already, and some of them are ones that we saw again with Bill Clinton. And one of them, to me, is that you're starting to see the pro-aborts kind of suck in some pro-lifers into this, well, let's just all sit down and set aside our differences. In other words, when they say set aside our differences, what that means is let's write the unborn off. Let's throw them under the bus. That's exactly what they mean.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, this dangerous phrase of let's find common ground.
There is no common ground. Agree to disagree is what they say. No, we can't agree to disagree when what we're disagreeing about is the exploitation of our brothers and sisters. You don't sit back and agree to disagree with the terrorists. You move in and you stop the terrorists. That's what you do.
That's our job. And when they say, we all agree that abortion's a tragedy and we need to sit down and look for common ground and look for ways to reduce the need for abortion. If you sit down with a pro-abort who just said, let's look for a way to reduce the need for abortion, you are confirming that there is a need. By simply sitting down and saying, okay, we'll look for a way to reduce the need, you're confirming what their position is, that there's a need for
it. There is no need.
There is never a need to kill a baby,
under
any circumstances.
That's right.
But once you concede that fact, you're done. And this is something that's very, very important here. It's not just a tactical error. It's a much bigger error than that, because one of the things that the abortion lobby has always known that they have to have in order to compete with us is moral equivalency, which they do not have.
That's right.
And the second, we sit across the table from them. It would have been like if in 1938 you had gone to the Jews in Germany and said, look, Hitler is in power, and he's going to be in power for a while, so you can't stop that. So why don't you sit down with the Nazis and look for a way to reduce the need for executing people in the gas chambers? No one would say that that was a smart thing to do. And no one would deny that if the Jewish people had sat down across the table from Himmler and Hitler and the rest of them and said, okay, we want to work with you guys and set aside our differences and look for common ground and look for ways to reduce the number of people that are being executed in the gas chambers, no one would argue that they had not given them moral equivalency, because they would have. Well, that's the same exact thing that's happening here. And it's very tempting. You know, one of the problems I think that we have in the pro-life movement is that our people are extremely nice. They're sociable people. They want to get along. They want to be liked. And so when the pro-aborts come along with this, let's look for a way to, let's set aside our differences and play nice, and it fits their personality to say, okay, given that, you know, we don't have a pro-life president, then let's just sit down with these people and give them moral equivalency, throw the unborn under the bus, and look for a way that we can all get together. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. Any of these pro-lifers out there that think that what we're going to do one day is get together with these pro-aborts and we're all going to sing Kumbaya around the campfire and walk off into the sunset, you know, arm in arm, it's not happening. It's not happening.
Yeah.
And they need to get beyond that naivete.
Well, as I've often said in different talks, if the current policy on abortion were that just one abortion a year were permitted in our country, all the efforts, all the groups, all the expenditure of time, money, and energy in the pro-life movement would be just as worth it as it is now, because you sacrifice one human life, you've broken the entire principle on which the protection of every one of us depends. This idea that, well, let's just reduce the numbers of abortions. Can you imagine if, speaking, you know, within the crisis of the Catholic Church with the clergy abuse scandal, can you imagine some people coming along saying, listen, you know, we all agree this is bad. You know, let's just work together to reduce the numbers of these kind of occurrences. No, you don't just work to reduce the numbers. It's zero tolerance. It's wrong. You stop it. You punish the offender. And that's it. So anyway, you know, like you say, you abandon the principle as soon as you realize that there's any wiggle room here.
Well, I was on a TV show one time arguing this with a pro-abort, and she said, look, you know, this is typical, Mr. Crutcher. You're one of those people who see everything in shades, in black and white. Mm-hmm. And she said, what you have to understand is there are shades of gray. And I said, yes, I will concede there are shades of gray, but that doesn't mean there aren't things that are black and white.
Right.
Simply seeing that there are some things in shades of gray doesn't mean that there aren't some things out there that are black and white. And this is one of them.
This is one of them.
That's right. That's
right. And this is something that we've got to get across to the pro-lifers, because, again, they're being sucked into this common ground, consistent ethic of life and all this stuff. There is no moral equivalency between abortion and all these other issues. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of days ago, I was on a talk show on radio. And this person called in about, well, if you're pro-life, does that mean pro-animal life? Well, as y'all know, I love animals, my dog and cats and all that. But you can't make a moral equivalency.
That would be ridiculous.
And when I said that to this woman, I said, let me ask you this question. If you were driving to work tomorrow and you ran over a squirrel, because she was saying there was an equivalency. Mm-hmm. And I said, if you ran over a squirrel or you ran over someone's five-year-old, would you see those as morally equivalent?
Would you do the same thing?
Right.
Yeah.
And, well, that's not a good analogy. It's a perfect analogy.
It is.
And she, you know, she knew she was in a trap there. But that's the kind of mentality that we buy into. If we're going to, if for example, I had been willing to agree with her that there was a moral equivalency between the life of a squirrel and the life of a five-year-old,
right,
and start debating it on that basis, then I'm buying her premise.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a very dangerous situation.
Well, we're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll continue to talk about our movement and how we need to progress within these next 4 years of the Obama administration. So, friends, please stay with us. We'll be right back.
There's nothing wrong with your television set. You don't see anything because there's nothing there. Abortion, the most common surgery in America. Why don't we ever see what it looks like? A message from Priests for Life.
Now you can make a difference in the lives of the unborn for as little as $12. Make your donation today and we'll send you a copy of the pro-life masterpiece, Earth's Trash, Heaven's Treasure. Vivid imagery and striking colors come together in a painting that captures the essence of eternal hope for the unborn. You'll help change the hearts and lives of people everywhere. Plus, you'll have a treasured piece of artwork that serves as a daily reminder of the beauty of precious living souls. Make your donation today.
Well, welcome back. We're with Mark Crutcher, president and founder of Life Dynamics. Check out the website prolifeamerica.com, and you'll see there the portal to Life Dynamics and also to our work at Priests for Life. We're here with Janet Marana, our executive director. And let's continue to talk about what our, you know, people like Obama got into office because there was a myth that was being spread around and continues to fester in various ways. And that is that you can somehow be pro-life and still elect a pro-abortion candidate, or that you can somehow be still Christian and be pro-choice. And neither one of those assertions is
those are out-and-out lies.
Yeah.
First off, to suggest that you can be pro-choice and a Christian is to say that basically God's neutral on whether a child that he created is killed or not. Because if you think about it from a whether you're Baptist like me or Catholic like you, there are certain things that we all agree are true. And we agree that the author of life is God. God is the one that creates human life.
Right.
We also would agree, I think, that God does not make mistakes. I think we could all agree that that's true, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So if God is the author of life and God does not make mistakes, that means that when a human life is inside its mom's womb, it was God's intent that it be there. But the pro-choice or pro-abortion position is that, no, we make that decision. Mm-hmm. Life is not a right that is given by God, it's a privilege that is bestowed by us. And that we can withhold that privilege at our choice. That's nonsense. If someone's an atheist and they want to be a pro-abort, that's consistent. They're wrong in both cases, but at least they're consistent. But for someone to sit here and tell me, oh, you can be a good Catholic or a good Baptist or a good Christian of any stripe and still support legalized abortion, that person is lying. Either that or they're really stupid, one or the other. They don't understand their own faith because that's not physically possible. Life is not a right that a privilege that we bestow. It's a right that God gives.
God himself gives it.
Right. And you can't get away from that. And whatever you call yourself, pro-abortion, pro-choice, whatever, you can't avoid that. And it's just a lie.
I think part of the problem why we ended up with Obama was that people were more concerned about their worldly goods, the economics of the country at that moment, instead of worrying about the judgment of God.
Well, Janet, you're exactly right. And again, on this talk show I was on just a couple of days ago, this subject came up. A woman called in and she said, look, I'm as good a Christian as anybody else, and I voted for Obama. I set aside his view on abortion, and I voted for him on the economic issues. Here's my argument. Let's say you took the number one abortionist in the country. Let's say George Tiller in Kansas kills all these late-term babies, kills babies in 39 weeks, almost term babies, purely elective. All right. And let's say you brought him into this room and you ask him, Tiller, why do you do this? And let's say in some sort of spasm, rare spasm of honesty, he says, I do it for the money. All right? That would be the truth, right?
Right.
All right. Now, let's take one of these people like you're talking about, or like I had on this lady on the radio. She says, I set aside Obama's position on abortion for financial reasons. How is she different than Tiller?
None.
She's absolutely no different than Tiller. She is saying, I am okay having these babies executed by the millions if it makes me money. Well, that's what Tiller's saying. And so the person in this case that allows the evil to occur, which we always know, is just as guilty as the person who does it.
That's right.
And in this particular case, it's a financial situation. And I'll promise you, when you look around and you see that Obama carried, you know, over 50% of the Catholic vote and 48% of the evangelical vote or whatever he carried, I mean, that is the abomination right there.
Yes.
And I said it back during the Clinton administration. The problem wasn't that we had a heretic like Bill Clinton and a moral degenerate like Bill Clinton elected as president. The problem was that we had people out there who call themselves good, conservative, Christian, all-Americans who elected him.
That's right.
And elected him a second time after they knew exactly what he was and would have elected him a third time if they'd have been able to.
That's right.
So it's the problem is not these people. The problem is the people who put them in office.
It reminds me of a line from the United States Bishop's document, Living the Gospel of Life. They say, we get the public officials we deserve.
Absolutely.
Their virtue or lack thereof is a reflection of ours.
Absolutely. Father Frank, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, there were people every bit as morally bankrupt as Obama or Clinton who ran for office.
Yep.
The difference was they didn't get elected.
The difference was in the electorate.
Right. It wasn't in them. Right. There's always been people like that, and there always will be. And that's where the work needs to be done. And I think it's one reason that we know that another one of these things that we can spiritually agree upon or theologically agree upon, judgment begins in the church.
Yes.
Because this is where the problem is. Without the church, Clinton would not have been elected. Obama would not have been elected. And we wouldn't be sitting here looking at the things that we're looking for over the next 4 years. If it had not been for good Christian people.
Exactly.
Or people who call themselves good Christian people.
Exactly. So clear teaching needs to be done. And that, of course, is one of the goals of this ministry is get that clear teaching out into those pulpits and into the hearts and minds of our viewers so that they can spread it in every way they can. Well, thanks, Janet. Thanks, Mark. And friends, stay with us. We're going to come back with our action segment to give you more ideas about practical things you can do to advance the culture of life. Meanwhile, all throughout these years, if you check out our website, politicalresponsibility.com, we'll have ongoing reflections on the kinds of things that we've talked about on today's program. Stay with us. We will be right back.
There is a crisis in America, a Holocaust that takes the lives of more than 3,000 children every day through the horrific act of abortion. Yet despite this tragic loss, we are gaining victory over this culture of death. In the last 12 years, half of the nation's freestanding abortion clinics have closed, and the abortion industry is on the run. Gospel of Life Ministries has played a vital role in the rescue of countless children and is currently in place to save thousands more. But we urgently need your support to make this happen. Not everyone can be on the front line of this battle, but when you support Gospel of Life, you are saving lives. Your life-saving gift of $25, $50, or $100 will help us provide alternatives to women who think they have no choice but abortion. And for those countless women who have lost children to abortion, Gospel of Life Ministries will help them find forgiveness, healing, and peace in the cross of Christ and become outspoken advocates for the lives of their unborn children. The help you provide will also bring the saving word of life to churches through a training program that is raising a mass voice that will see abortion stopped. With your gift of $25, we'll send you the booklet, Pro-Life, Today and Always. It will give you an overview of why we are pro-life and provide reflections that will stir and motivate you to action. With your gift of $50, we'll also send you the DVD, The Procedure. In this powerful DVD, you'll hear abortionists discuss the procedure in their own words and unmask the violence that the abortion industry tries to hide. And when you give a gift of $100, we'll also include the book, Forbidden Grief. This compelling book will open your eyes to the psychological damage done to those who have had an abortion experience. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
Friends, welcome to our action segment. One thing every believer can do to stop abortion is to pray that it stop. But we want to talk today about a very focused and specific way to do that and to invite others to do it. Janet, prayercampaign.org is our prayer website. Let's talk about how we use that and what we invite believers to do.
Well, first of all, we have two practical prayers up there that can be said every day throughout the year. That's the prayer to end abortion and the prayer for the closing of an abortion mill. In addition to those prayers being up on our website, we have prayer cards with those prayers on them for the end to abortion and the closing of the mill. And we will send it to them absolutely free of charge. And then they could take those prayer cards and tape them inside the hymn books in their church. I know many churches, what they do now as part of their church service, they say that prayer at the end of every service so that everyone is aware.
It can be said in church, it can be said in the family, it can be said in pro-life groups, in schools, and, of course, by individuals. But let's talk about specifically, first of all, the prayer to end abortion every day is the one we want every believer to say every day. Because if we get people saying it every day, then you have people thinking about abortion every day, and they're going to look to do other things as well. So it's going to draw them in, it's going to get them involved. And the prayer doesn't simply ask God to end abortion. It is a prayer of commitment that the individual will speak up and do things to protect the unborn. Now, the other prayer you mentioned is if there is a specific abortion mill in one's community, it enables them as individuals, families, or as an entire church congregation, it enables them to focus in on that place and pray for the conversion and closing of that particular killing center.
Right.
That's
and when you say the pray for the conversion now, Father, we're talking about the abortionist himself, but we're also talking about the conversion of all the people who work inside that abortion clinic.
That's right.
You know, and of course, obviously, then praying for the men and women who are going there to destroy their children, praying for their conversion of heart also.
Right.
Now, like you had said, each person can have those prayer cards. I know people that keep them on their night table so that they can say that prayer when they get up in the morning or before they go to bed at night. Someone told me that they have it taped to their medicine cabinet in their bathroom so that as they're brushing their teeth, they say that prayer. Because people say, oh, where am I going to have the time to add this to my prayer life with all the other prayers I say? I know someone, while they brush their teeth, they say their prayers. But like I said, the pastors, we really need the ministers to get involved and use those prayers in their church services. But in addition, on the website, prayercampaign.org, we post different prayers every month that also coordinate with the theme. So, for example, around election season, we'll have prayers for the election. Thanksgiving, we'll have a special prayer for Thanksgiving. When it gets to the Christmas season and to the new year, what better time to have a special prayer for life as you start a new year? You know, I know very often, Father, you preached about the idea that a new year represents that God gives you a book with empty pages to write on. And what better way to have a focused prayer to say as you start that new year?
Mm-hmm. On the prayercampaign.org website, people can let us know that they've signed up to do this. And that also helps, too. It helps us to be then in communication if they wish. Otherwise, they can just download the prayer and use it in the different ways that you've described.
That's right.
Prayer is a foundation of everything that we do, obviously. It's not a substitute for doing other things. In fact, when we pray, we are going to be led into more action, and that's certainly what we hope will happen here.
That's right.
Thanks very much, Janet. Friends, we ask you to promote not only prayercampaign.org on your websites and to your email lists and in your newsletters, but also gospeloflife.com, which is our ministry website. We ask you to promote this program. And may we ask you also for your financial support, because this ministry relies completely on believers like you to keep it going. We rely on you to be able to produce these programs, to be able to travel the nation, do the pro-life work that we do, send out the literature that we send. Go to gospeloflife.com. You'll be able to either send us checks in support of this work or donate online and pledge to donate monthly if you so desire. Our pastoral team is also willing to come to your community. Let us know if you'd like that to happen, and we'll see you again next week.
You were looking at the face of an unborn child, 25 and a half weeks into pregnancy. This child can be legally killed by abortion in America. As this ad from the Yellow Pages proves, some abortion clinics sell abortions up to 28 weeks. Abortion kills living children whose hearts are beating and whose bodily organs are all in place. Abortion. Haven't we gone too far?
There is a crisis in America, a Holocaust that takes the lives of more than 3,000 children every day through the horrific act of abortion. Yet despite this tragic loss, we are gaining victory over this culture of death. With your gift of $25, we'll send you the booklet, Pro-Life, Today and Always. It will give you an overview of why we are pro-life and provide reflections that will stir and motivate you to action. With your gift of $50, we'll also send you the DVD, The Procedure. In this powerful DVD, you'll hear abortionists discuss the procedure in their own words and unmask the violence that the abortion industry tries to hide. And when you give a gift of $100, we'll also include the book, Forbidden Grief. This compelling book will open your eyes to the psychological damage done to those who have had an abortion experience. Please call, write, or make your gift online today. Father Frank A. Pavone, director of Gospel of Life Ministries, is an internationally known pro-life activist, speaker, and author. He has been the national director of Priests for Life since 1993 and appears regularly in the religious and secular media. He has served at the Vatican's Pontifical Council for the Family. He has been a spiritual guide for Norma McCorvey, the former Jane Roe of the Supreme Court's abortion decision, Roe v. Wade. Father Frank is president of the National Pro-Life Religious Council, an umbrella group of many denominations working to end abortion. Father Frank is also the national pastoral director and board chairman of Rachel's Vineyard, the world's largest ministry of healing after abortion. Father Frank is a Catholic priest of the Diocese of Amarillo, Texas, and carries out his pro-life mission with the permission of his bishop. For more information on Father Frank and Priests for Life, visit www.priestsforlife.org. Gospel of Life program is made possible by the supporters of Gospel of Life Ministries and Priests for Life. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of stopping abortion and providing post-abortion healing. Specific outreaches mentioned are examples of the programs conducted and supported. Gifts are considered to be without use restriction unless specifically stipulated by the donor.